This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Joy Powers. This week marks the 50th anniversary of the historic push for open housing in Milwaukee. On August 28, 1967, marchers began their demonstration. They continued for 200 consecutive days, in some cases encountering violent counter-protesters.
Reports about that period often focus on the charismatic leaders of the push for open housing. They included Father James Groppi, members of the NAACP Youth Council, and Vel Phillips, the alderwoman who had been trying to convince the Common Council to approve open housing for years.
But in this segment, we hear from some of the lesser-known people involved in the marches. WUWM's Annalise Henzel compiled reflections from some of the marchers, people who were teenagers at the time.
Father James Groppi of St. Boniface Church was the advisor of the NAACP Youth Council. The Catholic priest and teenagers on the council are pictured walking side by side in countless photos of the housing marches. But the group didn't form with the intent of becoming political. That's according to Dr. Shirley R. Berry Dirge, who was a member. She shares this origin story.
The youth didn't have anything, nowhere to go for entertainment, just to sit and have a soda and talk. So Father suggested that why don't we all just meet after church in the church basement and we can just talk and talk about, you know, our schools or whatever was going on in the community, whatever our concerns were. And actually, that's what was the birth of the Youth Council.
It was toward the end of 1966 that the Youth Council began pushing for open housing, an end to discrimination against Black residents. For months, the council and Father Groppi used a number of tactics to pressure city leaders. Then, in August of 1967, they planned a symbolic march across the Menominee Valley, walking to the near south side, which was largely white.
The first march across the bridge was terrifying, and they were throwing glass, bottles, cans, rocks, and stones.
Dirge is talking about the walk across the 16th Street Viaduct that spans the valley. When marchers got to the south side, they faced the wrath of counter-demonstrators who easily outnumbered them. That was the first of 200 consecutive nights of marching. And Dirge says it wasn't the only time the marchers faced danger. The Youth Council formed a group called the Commandos, who were tasked with protecting the marchers. Yet they couldn't keep everyone safe. Dirge says a lot of her friends were injured over the course of the marches. So was Father Groppi. She was walking near him when he was hit by a big rock.
And blood just came all down his face. And the commandos immediately surrounded him, put him further in the middle. But Father didn't faze him at all. He just kept marching.
I don't think anybody quite expected it to be as intense.
Barbara David Salas was another marcher. She says not only were people surprised by the intensity of the pushback, they also were surprised the marches went on for so long.
At the beginning, the preparation was not for a 200-day march. It started with the large marches. There was lots of reaction. National attention focused on Milwaukee. There were people from all over the country who joined us here for those marches initially. But it didn't accomplish what we wanted. You know, even with all that attention, even with all that pressure. So I think we all felt that we weren't going to give up.
Salas says the push for open housing wasn't just about ending the discrimination African-Americans faced. She says it was a movement for justice for everyone. And she says in the thick of the confrontations with counter-demonstrators, the issue of race faded away among the marchers.
Facing a screaming mob, throwing things at you, do you think we worried about which one of us was Black and which one of us was white? We were brothers and sisters in the cause.
Dr. Earl Bracey was another member of the NAACP Youth Council. He says the marches grew out of frustration among African Americans who had moved from the South to Milwaukee to find work. Bracey says many expected to find more opportunities, including the freedom to choose where they lived.
I think in the South, a lot of the racism and discrimination was kind of overt, you know. In the North, it was more covert. So people would do things, and they would do it to maybe contain or to kind of keep you back from progressing, you know, not being able to buy a house, you know, where you wanted to buy a house. You know, and some people, they're kind of like cordoned off.
Another marcher, Ken McGee, says Black residents only were welcomed in a small portion of the central city. He says people selling houses in other neighborhoods could turn away African Americans who were looking to buy a home there.
You probably had some real estate brokers who were African American who also steered you away, assuming you're not going to be happy there, so they didn't even show you houses. That was my issue. If I can afford it, I should be able to live where I want to live.
In the early spring of 1968, Congress was considering the Fair Housing Act. The Youth Council ended its nightly marches. Less than a week later, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. A huge march in his honor took place in Milwaukee. And not long afterward, the federal government and the Milwaukee Common Council approved open housing laws. Although several factors contributed to the end of legal housing discrimination here, McGee says there's no denying the role the Youth Council played.
We forced the city to recognize that it was an issue because we marched every day.
For Lake Effect, I'm Annalise Henzel, 89.7 WUWM.
Audio for this story was collected by journalism students at Marquette University.
But I say we want freedom.